Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk about, well, there's three things I love to talk about, food, and sports. But so we bring in Arthur, and I just have a, this is a great way for me to start my week, even though this week I've been on pins and needles because I gave Arthur some pointers on how to do a heritage bird because I've done them for the past several years. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Well, my bird, I'm sure, did not turn out as good as your bird. My bird was, I thought, very disappointing. One of our very polite guests said, oh, this must be what my mother is talking about when she says chicken doesn't taste like chicken anymore. The turkey, I'm just going to, at the end point here, okay, the turkey that I bought, and I'm not blaming this on heirloom varieties, although I have a comment about that, this was a so-called heirloom or heritage turkey, bronze heritage turkey, raised by a farm in Pennsylvania, which is where I bought the turkey, by the way. I bought it at Whole Foods in right outside Philly, in Wynwood, Pennsylvania, which main line, with so-called main line. It's where the suburban train goes. Anyway, great store in general. So this bird, I thought, was very tough, even in the most tender places, and had a flavor that I was unaccustomed to,
yeah,
for sure. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't like it, but I wasn't thrilled with it. I really wasn't. And I made broth when I got home back to Brooklyn on Friday from Philly. I made broth with the carcass, and I didn't even like the smell of the broth, but I let it go anyway. And it ended up to be fine. I put vegetables in there. It sweetened it up. It was all balanced out by the end. But I wasn't thrilled with the flavor, and certainly it was a very tough bird. So that was my story. And I think I cooked it perfectly, to be honest. I think I did. I put it in at 400 degrees, all rubbed down with butter, put white wine and some herbs at the bottom of the pan. It was on a rack. And after an hour of starting it, so to speak, and basting it a couple times, I just let it go at 325. And I did have to tent it after about 2 hours because I thought it was getting a little too brown on the top, but I didn't cover the whole thing. I just draped a piece of foil over the top. And then I uncovered it at the end because, you know, then it wasn't brown enough. And in fact, I opened the oven a couple times, not that many times, during the 325-degree roasting. And I felt like this bird took longer than 15 minutes a pound. I know it took longer than 15 minutes a pound, which is usually what I allow for a commercial white-feathered turkey. So all in all, I won't do the Whole Foods experience again because it was chaotic, to put it mildly. I'm going to see if I can tell this bad story quickly. But I ordered the bird online, got a I ordered a 12 to 14 pound bird online, and got a confirmation immediately. And then we realized we had, well, we didn't realize, but more people were coming than we expected when I ordered the bird. So I called back and asked if I could make it a larger bird, and they said no. They said, we don't have any larger birds. Stick to what you got. So I did. Then I get a call at 7 o'clock on the Friday before. Oh, by the way, you have to make an appointment to pick up this bird. Mine was for 6:30 on Tuesday evening. And I showed up, and anyway, on Friday before, I get a call at 7 o'clock at night on a Friday from the meat manager at this particular Whole Foods. And she says, oh, we're so sorry, but we can't get you a 12 to 14 pound turkey. I said, well, that's fine. I said, do you have a larger one? She says, oh, yes, we have larger ones. I said, well, that's fine, because that's what I wanted anyway. So nobody had even gotten the word to her that I had increased my request. I get to the store about, well, I was in the store, but I got to the desk where you pick up the bird, supposedly, at 20 to 7, 10 minutes later than 6:30. I didn't get my bird for a half an hour. You have to do this and do that, and then they bring the bird out, and then they bring the bird out, and it was a 12 to 14 pound bird when it was supposed to be 18 to 20. And I said, oh, well, wait a minute. You told me you didn't even have... anyway, they finally found me a 18-pound bird, which was fine. But now the assistant meat manager is there with me. He's at this desk because it's chaotic at this desk where they're supposed to be delivering the turkeys at different hours. And I say to him, I'm holding this turkey, which comes in a plastic bag. I said, you know, this is, feels like a frozen turkey to me. This is supposed to be a fresh-killed turkey. He said, oh, it is a fresh-killed turkey. It's just that it's been in deep chill. And so the surface feels very hard. I bought this.
No, that's
insane. It wasn't
true. No, not at all.
No. I put the bird in the refrigerator on Tuesday night, and when I went to make broth with the wingtips and whatever was inside on Wednesday morning, I found that the neck was solid frozen.
Yeah.
The neck, which was in the cavity of the bird, was frozen. So that means that at some point this bird was frozen.
Yep, absolutely.
Because it wasn't just deep chill that froze the neck in the middle. Now, you know, 12 hours in the refrigerator may have defrosted what was left of needed to be defrosting, but it was totally a horrible experience. I mean, I got over it.
No, but that's when I'm told
but,
to
know,
pick up.
But the end result, and I was thinking to myself at the time, I said, well, if this is really a superior bird, it was worth going through, but it wasn't.
You know, what's interesting is when I pick up my bird, they give you, there's the date that they process it. Then the next day after that, you can come anytime and pick it up. Anytime.
Well, that's because you're buying it at a real farmer.
Yeah, yeah. And
let me say, I haven't had a frozen bird in so many years.
Yeah.
Because we always buy from a local farm.
Yeah.
They're commercial white, broad-breasted, whatever they call them, turkeys. This one had, believe me, by the way, this one had plenty of breast, and I'm usually a dark meat person, but the dark meat was, I thought, pretty tough. The leftover recipe that I have been wanting to make but haven't had a chance to make, and I probably now will not be able to make it because I don't think my turkey is going to last but another minute here from Thursday, is a turkey tetrazzini, which says to cut the meat into strips. But fact is, the strips would be way too tough. So I would have to stand here, and I don't mind doing this, dice it into small pieces to make turkey tetrazzini or, truthfully, any leftover recipe. And I wouldn't want to put this turkey, even the tenderest part of the white meat, I would not want to put it in a sandwich.
I will tell you right now, the toughest part of the turkey every year, a heritage turkey, are the drumsticks.
Yeah.
Drumsticks and the wings,
yeah.
they're tough and
impenetrable.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
So I don't really eat those anyways. But the dark meat for us was not at all. So boy, I'm sorry you had that experience.
Well, the reason I brought up the frozen turkey part is that maybe frozen. Oh, by the way, this was an immediate signal that that this was not what I was looking for. It had one of those instant thermometers, the pop-up thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It had a pop-up thing.
Are you sure you got it?
I saw it pop. It popped up, and I thought, all right, let me check the temperature here. And Brian, my nephew, has one of these
super
really high-tech
duper, right.
Thermometers. And the dark meat was nowhere near done. In fact, you know, we poked in the thermometer, and blood came out.
So
I had to put this back in. I don't think I overcooked the breast, actually. I think the pop-up thing was totally incorrect.
I will just
in
say...
In fact, it was. The breast meat was only like 150 at the time that the thing popped out.
When did they
so
have
I knew
time?
I could safely put this back in the oven.
I just can't believe...
The dark meat. Though.
I can't believe that somebody sells a heritage bred turkey, which is special, and then they put a pop up timer in it. I'm sorry.
When do you have time to put that in?
That tells me it was a frozen turkey right from the get go.
Yeah.
Well, so this is it. I'm gonna. Did I mention the name of this farm?
No.
Ron's?
Koch, K-O-C-H. Of course, I was ready to blame the Koch brothers, but in fact, it seems unrelated to the Koch brothers.
Oh, well, I'm sure we can make it.
The Koch family. So I don't know. I'm going to call them and ask them about this, and it may not have been their fault that this bird was frozen, and it was supposed to be fresh. It's possible Whole Foods froze it.
Wow.
Anyway, but on to cranberry sauce.
Yes.
Okay, that's a good segue.
Because I did an experiment. I had, don't laugh at me, folks, I had a bag of cranberries in the freezer from last Thanksgiving. They say, you know, they freeze well, and I always thought, yeah, they freeze well. And it was an unopened bag, and I bought it because it was like cost two cents, you know, post-Thanksgiving, post-Christmas maybe it was. And they want to get rid of these cranberries. So I bought some bags, and I had one bag left from last year. I thought, you know, the week before Thanksgiving, let me make sure that this is okay. I'll make the cranberry sauce. Once it's, you know, boiled up with sugar, it'll be preservable for at least a week in the refrigerator. So I did it, and I did, as I've said before, Thanksgiving was never the meal I had to produce. My sister always, and her then husband did it, but I just showed up. So now I don't have a cranberry sauce recipe that I've made for 35 years. Whatever I did last year, I didn't like. I do remember that, but I remember it had too much stuff in it. So this year I made just cranberries. I think this might be on the back of some cranberry bags. Just cranberries. And I had bought this big crate of mandarin oranges. You know, they're all on sale now. So without seeds, so they're no trouble. Four mandarin oranges. It's a heaping cup of segments. You peel and segment them. You throw them in the pot. Well, first you bring a cup of water and a cup of sugar to a boil. Then you throw in the cranberries. And for me, as soon as you hear the first couple pop, you can throw in the mandarin oranges. If you want to see the oranges at the end, you have to add them much later, but I don't need to see them at the end. I want the flavor in there and their pulp in there. And that's it. And you let it simmer for 10 minutes. So I did this with the frozen cranberries, but then I saw at Whole Foods in Pennsylvania, they were selling gorgeous-looking and enormous cranberries from southern New Jersey. And I thought, you know, let me try these. So I did identical thing with the big cranberries from southern New Jersey. In this case, I had my little nieces peel the mandarins and segment the oranges, something they even the 2.5-year-old loves to do. And so they felt like they made the cranberry sauce. Anyway, I made the two cranberry sauces, and I kept them separate, and I asked everybody at the table to decide which one they liked better. And, you know, everybody liked the expensive cranberries, organic from South Jersey, better. But maybe this was a function of the other cranberries being in the freezer for
years. Yeah,
no
maybe.
Way to know. Yeah. Gotta say, my frozen cranberry sauce was so delicious. When I made it, and I think even on Thanksgiving, that I would do this with frozen cranberries. And I was thinking, boy, this would be really good on waffles. I don't love maple syrup so much. You know, my family is every one of them is crazy for maple syrup, which is why my nephew buys by the gallon. And I'm just questioning, since both of you probably know more about maple syrup than we do. Do you keep your opened container of maple syrup in the refrigerator?
I do.
My grandmother never did, but it's because we used it a lot. But if I get maple syrup, I don't use it a lot. And she also used to make her own maple syrup. So no, I don't. I don't. I keep it in the. I keep it in the refrigerator because I don't use it enough.
Well, this was a question that came up. I think Brian and his family use it quite a lot. I mean, the girls only have literally a tablespoonful in the morning with whatever bread product or whatever. I mean, if they have cereal, they don't have it. But anyway, and they have waffles in the morning or whatever. But Michelle, the mama here, another physician, is disturbed by Brian keeping the maple syrup at room temperature. So we have to. She says, "Oh, perfect climate for bacteria growth," and she's probably right. But I don't keep mine refrigerated, and nothing happens to it. Hmm. I don't buy it by the gallon, yeah. But I buy it by the quart, and we don't use it very much. I mean, it could sit here a year easily. I know I have maple syrup from last year here. Maybe I should put it in the refrigerator. They say mold is the main pest. How would you say?
But once something gets mold, I mean, people need to know more about mold, especially after stuffing. But never mind.
Well, stuffing, you know. Yeah. I don't stuff. I do on the side.
Oh, I have to say, we had great.
I do both, and I'll tell you, my stuffing, the Indobird stuffing this year, came out
really
the best
good.
I ever made. Unbelievable.
What did you call it?
Indobird stuffing, of course. You know, I make it up in advance, and then
the stuffing that he cooked in the bird.
Yeah, and then I put it in the bird, and it just comes out so good. Oh my god!
You put it in the bird.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He does both.
I do both
from the beginning.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Old family.
It doesn't, you know, one of the problems with doing that is that you have to bring, you know, in order to kill bacteria, you got to bring the stuffing to over 140 degrees. And it's possible you won't get that far without overcooking the breast.
It's never happened so far.
Never
say never.
Thanksgiving next year, it'll save me from 2 days of cooking.
Yeah,
I did it all, every last thing myself this year, including everything.
It's a pain.
And I made like five desserts too.
Oh my god.
So what can I say? I was totally exhausted on Friday, and then I got home, and my dear friend Cecilia is here from Italy. And I had to take care of her on Friday night, including entertain her and her friend who's visiting from Alaska. I'm very fond of these ladies, but still I was pretty tired after driving home for 2.5 hours, too, on Friday. And then Saturday I had a half a day off. And Sunday, yesterday, I did my Brooklyn tour with our friend from Alaska. And she had never seen the Atlantic Ocean. So we did that. We went all the way to Coney Island and Brighton Beach, and we ate Turkish food and stopped and bought Georgian cheese bread, which everybody went wild for. So we did that. And then today we're coming up to you. Oh, well, not quite. We're only going as far as New Milford, but it's another active day when my back could really use a rest.
Now, did anybody at your Thanksgiving dinner do what I normally do, and that is I don't do it anymore because I don't have cranberries. I always loved, forget the turkey, I always loved to have a stuffing and cranberry sandwich.
Well, nobody did that because I didn't stick around on Friday to see how the leftovers were consumed.
Okay.
But I sort of doubt it. For one thing, that's not my nephew's style.
Okay.
For a second, his girl, you know, little kids go through a phase where they don't want their food touching each other or mixed together.
Some of us haven't.
Some people don't get over it. Like, chill.
Okay. Well, these two little girls are at that point. The only thing that gets mixed is they dunk their morning waffle or pancake in maple syrup. That's as far as it goes, as far as I can tell. It was very interesting because what I put together Sydney's plate for her, and she had no interest in the turkey. She wanted potatoes, gravy, stuffing. She loved the cranberry sauce because, one, she made it. She considered that she made it, which she sort of did. She stirred it. She segmented the oranges. She watched it. I also made a candy with them. With them is Maya, who's 2 years and 9 months, and Sydney, who's going to be 5 in a couple weeks. It's a real kid-friendly candy. I'm not sure if I've given this recipe on the air. it's a cup and a half of graham cracker crumbs. The bottom is a graham cracker crumb thing, and the top is chocolate. So on the bottom you put, in a mixing bowl together, a cup and a half of confectioner's sugar, a cup and a half of graham cracker crumbs, a cup of peanut butter. If you want it to be crunchy, it can be. I like smooth. And a stick of melted butter. You mix that all together, and the girls mixed it all together. They took turns. Of course, they have to take turns at mixing it all together and then pressing it into the bottom of an 8-inch square pan. And then you chill this. It's a no-bake thing. You chill the bottom graham cracker crumb thing. And then when you're ready to finish it, it could be the next day or after a few hours when the bottom is firm. Oh, by the way, it's better to butter the bottom of the pan. I didn't, and so the first row of candy when it comes out may not be perfect. Anyway, the chocolate topping is a kind of ganache. It's just chocolate melted into cream. A cup of heavy cream and 8 ounces of chocolate, which you chunk up or break up, depends on the kind of chocolate. It should be semi-sweet chocolate. I use like a 70% really good Belgian chocolate that I can buy in my supermarket for not a crazy price either. And you just chunk it and you just melt it. You just keep stirring. And the girls were fascinated at how, in the beginning, it just looks like cream white with bits of black in it, chocolate, and eventually the chocolate starts melting, and by the end, it's really dark chocolate. Beautiful. And you just pour that over the bottom, and you chill that. And if you want, you can put coarse salt in the chocolate layer to, you know, make it very trendy. You can also, if you want, add a little salt to the graham cracker base, but I don't find it's necessary if you're using commercial peanut butter product. If you're using pure peanut butter, meaning you go to the market and grind up your peanuts in that machine, then I think you should add maybe a half a teaspoon of salt to the bottom part. And I never got to the chicken tetrazzini, but we're going to assume if you still have turkey in your refrigerator, you probably should throw it out.
Yeah, you should, or give it to the pigs, or do something with it.
We'll hold off on that till Christmas, when you have Christmas turkey.
Right.
To make into a leftover. But, you know what, just briefly, this is a recipe from Bert Green, the great food writer, and it's just a mushroom cream sauce you make with, you know, roux and milk or cream and butter and mushrooms, and then you toss that with spaghetti, and then you toss it again with diced or sliced whatever turkey, and the big deal is you top it off with quite a large amount, a half a cup of grated Parmesan cheese, and put it in the oven for 20 minutes, 400 degrees. So I did it in less than a minute.
Well, sounds good.
There?
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty.
By my clock, it's 8 o'clock.
Yeah, your clock's fast.
Your clock's fast.
Still.
It's 7:56.
Really? 4 minutes off? Let me say, I have to comment on this, because I am looking at a clock that was bought 36 years ago. It's one of these little, forgetting the brand, it's a really good brand.
Pullover?
And it's still working. It's a battery-operated clock, Casio.
Casio, all right.
It's, and by the way, even the design is extremely dated. And this has gone through 36 years of my life. I used to have two, down to one, and I'm thinking maybe it's time to retire it if it's 4 minutes slow after I reset it fairly recently. It
could be the battery.
Yeah, I guess it could be, because I don't think maybe I once changed the battery in 36 years.
Yeah, it could be the battery.
Yeah. There's actually, on this one, there's a couple of spots of paint from a paint job in an apartment that I haven't lived in 20 years and didn't paint. So it's 25-year-old speckled with paint. And I thought it was a really reliable. It's very discreet, so I can keep it on my kitchen shelf without actually having to look at it all the time.
All right. Well.
All right.
Well,
no rest for Schwartz today.
No, Schwartz has got.
Don't call me tomorrow.
All right.
We won't call you tomorrow.
I'm going to be incommunicado for at least one day.
All right. Well, drive safe.
And maybe next year we'll get that turkey for you from.
Yeah, next year I don't know what I'm going to do, but I might say I'm not cooking.
And if you do cook, we've got a better source.
The supermarket cashier, who the last one that I spoke to on the day before Thanksgiving, said, "Oh, we're not doing Thanksgiving at my house anymore. There's an all-you-can-eat buffet right down the road, a hotel right down the road." So I asked Brian if he heard about this. He hadn't, but I'm gonna do a little research.
All right. Well, next year, if you're going to get a bird, we'll get you the bird from Turkana Farms, and you can
okay. Okay. Maybe I don't have to wait till next year. Maybe I can get one now.
They only do this right for Thanksgiving.
They don't have any left over.
Not even for Christmas.
Nope, they sold
they
out.
Totally sold
no,
out.
No, they sell goose for Christmas.
There's no meat on a goose.
That's exactly what they say. You have to be a very particular person. They say if you want goose for Christmas.
Yeah. My grandmother used to cook a goose, not for Christmas, but she used to cook a goose sometime at the end of the year. But she and my grandfather ate all the meat on the goose. What she really wanted the goose for was the goose fat. And so I grew up eating some things that my grandmother made with goose fat. Uh-huh. And my favorite, by the way, was cauliflower with breadcrumbs cooked in goose fat.
That's a great way to eat cauliflower is all I can say.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good to me.
That's right. All right, Arthur.
All right, take care.
Take care, everybody. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio, and Thanksgiving in 2018. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton, Flawless Catering and Event Planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, JARestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.